Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the June 10 edition of Commodity Week. Well, the World Agricultural Outlook Board says the weather has been so bad there must be fewer acres of corn to be planted this year. The agency dropped that number and changed the whole of the 2010-11 balance sheet Thursday. We'll discuss what it means today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jerry Golke of the Golke Group. Our panelists in studio include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Pete Banhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. USDA this week cut production prospects for corn by 305 million bushels. It then countered that with a 100 million bushel reduction in corn fed to livestock in the new crop year for 100 million. Which of those numbers is right today? We'll start with you, Dale Durkles.
Probably none of the above, as we're really just starting the process where we're going to start learning about what the fundamental structure of the new corn crop is going to be. In particular, looking at the acreage number, there have been about four or five instances in the past 20 years where they've lowered the number in June from where they had been in March, only to get egg thrown in their face and have a bigger number come back in the June report at the end. But I don't know that that will be the case this year.
Pete Manhart?
Yeah, they lowered the acres, 1.5 million? They lowered that feed usage. I don't know if they are close to anything on either one of them. There's just not enough info out there yet on where we're still planting.
And Bill Mayer.
Well, I think that they, my opinion would be they're not quite low enough yet on the acres. They dropped the harvested acres. Planted, as Pete said, was 1.5 million. Harvested is 1.9 million reduction. I think they probably still need to reduce that some. And as far as reducing the feed usage, with corn prices moving up as they have and livestock prices moving lower, I think they would have been wrong to not drop feed usage somewhat.
Corn futures this week had a high on the nearby July lead option contract of $7.99¾, a low at $7.29¼. Remember, that's the weekly trade day and open outcry electronic two overnight as well. July settled $7.87, up 33 cents from the previous Friday. December futures at $7.125, settled up 26¼. USDA changed this week the expected average cash price for the farmer for corn by 80 cents on the bottom from last year, not the previous one, but from last year, and $1.50 on the top. It now stands at $6 to $7 for the average cash price for the coming year. I think that's about right.
For cash, we can get that right now in lots of places for new crop. I don't know what the crop's going to be, so I don't know if it's right or not, but I think we're going to be a lot of people selling at those prices.
You know, when you look at those prices, the one thing you have to acknowledge, we really haven't gotten to the beginning of the marketing year yet. Now, those do factor in price levels for pre-harvest sales that are being made even today. So, you know, to be that aggressive raising the number would suggest that at least they think corn prices are going to generally stay pretty strong.
So, again, the cash price average, according to USDA and the World Agriculture Outlook Board, is $6 to $7 for the coming year. It was $5.50 to $6.50 just a month ago, so they upped at 50 cents then. And then last year's average cash price, and we still have the marketing year to finish out, range from $5.20 to $5.50. Where are we in most trouble in the Corn Belt for not getting acres planted, and what difference does it make?
Well, I think the East, obviously, Ohio. I know I talked to a client in Ohio this week, and in their area they'd been making a lot of progress, but there's still going to be a lot of prevent plant in the area. Indiana, I think the eastern part of Indiana, and of course the Dakotas, and I'm sure Jerry will talk about that later. I think the interesting thing on that is we probably have some increased acres in Iowa, Illinois, and Nebraska in corn, and I guess one question I had after the report was whether the USDA was correct in not changing the yield, maybe increasing the yield a little bit on corn, because of the fact that we do have a pretty good start on this corn in a big part of the Corn Belt.
So the United States Department of Agriculture left yield at 158.7. You're suggesting that maybe if all of those acres are in Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska, and Minnesota, the top four corn-producing states, that we might need to up that acreage, that or not the acreage, but the yield number.
We are probably going to take off some of the fringe areas, I guess it looks to me like.
You agree with that?
We are going to take off fringe areas, but we're also going to take out Indiana and Ohio acres, which are the sixth and seventh highest producers in the U.S., so I don't know if I'm ready for that yet.
You know, I agree with Bill, and, you know, we are concentrating acres back into primary corn states where yields are better, but I think it's just so early in the growing season that, you know, it's a lot like flipping a coin and making an adjustment on that at this particular juncture in time. So I can see why they didn't, but I think going forward in time, I think Bill's got a point we're going to have to watch as we get into the growing season, too.
You, Dale, suggested early on in this conversation that USDA World Agriculture Outlook Board might have egg on its face by the time we get to the NAS reported numbers, the National Agricultural Statistics Service numbers on June 30. What do you think that number might show?
Haven't really started to push a pencil on it yet at this particular point in time. It's going to be something less than the 92.2 that you know they've been building into their mix at this point in time. The one thing I find interesting, there's a firm out there that does satellite imagery, you know, and they're swinging either side of 91 million acres right now. And if there's anybody that I think can do a good job with satellite imagery and acreage estimates, it probably is them. But the USDA number that they put out yesterday is within that range, too.
We have not yet dealt with the 2010-11 ending stocks. This is the place from which we start, based off the 90.7 million acres that the World Agriculture Outlook Board put, 695 million bushels in the bin by the time we get to the fall of 2012. It's a really low starting place, I think, a 5.2% stocks-to-use ratio.
It's a very low number. It's just barely, if you consider 675 pipeline right above it, and we haven't been through July, the main growing month. You talked about old crop. They did not change yet, and old crop is in very tight supply. People are paying over a ton, end users are, for old crop corn and worried they won't be able to find any in August.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point that Pete brings up, the old crop corn supply. As we go into deliveries on the July, I think the one thing from a marketing perspective, not only if you have old crop corn or not, but just because it affects the whole marketplace, I think we could see some real fireworks going into that July contract, because I think there's some supplies that are in the wrong position, I mean, in the wrong places, and I think there's people that have futures bought that believe they can, you know, get cash corn through that delivery process that may not be able to do that.
There's an adage that says the cure for high prices is high prices. Are we getting to that point?
Well, I think we definitely, when you're looking at the prices that we saw this week, basically when you look at the nearby contract continuation chart, I mean, the highest prices you see on that chart, yeah, I mean, you definitely have some downside risk in this thing. And ethanol margins are actually a little bit higher this week than they were a week ago. So not in every sector, but in some sectors.
You know, there are a couple issues, and I'll just make some quick points. Number one, at the end of the week, we started to get a lot of talk about people in the south-southeast rotating out corn into wheat in their feed mixes, and I think that's been a plan that people have had in place going back into after the March stocks report. Probably
and
didn't
actually listed in that report.
Probably didn't transact it or really physically start it, but I think, you know, in the last few weeks here, probably really started that path. Another thing, when we look at the concentration of all the ethanol plants that are out in the far western Corn Belt and on either side of where we're going to have an awful lot of problem with flooding on the Missouri River, and what's going to be the impact that's going to have on transportation, the ability to get ethanol away from those plants, you know, and that can slow down corn grind out there a little bit. That could pad it a little bit. The other thing that I think is just a broad overreaching thing in the marketplace that the corn market's going to have to deal with here is when you look at the crude oil market, what it did at the end of the week, when you look at the dollar and what it did at the end of the week, you get a sense that we have a changing mix going on in the world of outside markets here, and people are starting to run away from risk, and you really kind of wonder what's going to be the impact of that on the corn market.
Across the board for the three of you, I want to poll where you feel you are in the marketplace this week. Are you neutral or are you bullish? You can be bearish, and just some quick reasons why you're in that position.
I guess I would say on the corn market, I would be bullish. I'd be leaning towards the bullish side, but I realize you got a lot of downside risk. I think you just got to put some floors in and let the market run up if it wants to run up.
In corn, I would be neutral to bullish, and on any move up when we have them, I would be looking at either cash or put spreads to cover the downside.
I think if I gave an opinion, be neutral to maybe just a smidgen to the bear side. And I'm really concerned about some of this whole outside risk parameter and how that's going to affect commodity prices as a whole. You know, the one thing we got to deal with here in the corn market is that, you know, there's this attitude that, you know, corn is the driver. But right now we're running into wheat harvest, and if wheat weakens up, it can be a real drag on the corn market over the next few weeks as we get into full harvest.
Well, that tells us that you ought to answer the next question, or at least talk about the wheat market just a bit. July had a high this week of $7.78, a low at $7.31 and a quarter. Its settlement price was down 14.5 cents at $7.59 and a quarter. By the way, remember, it is now below July corn, which settled at $7.87. July of next year at $8.79 and three quarters was down 38.5 cents. Is wheat low enough to actually substitute for corn fairly efficiently?
Yeah, it is at this point in time, because you also have to consider we've got a great transportation cost of taking corn out of the Midwest down into the South and the Southeast. So you have to add that on top of it at this point. I even looked this last week one day, not at the end of the week, comparing December corn, December wheat, and we were starting to get within distance where you could even start to say that would be a workable substitution, and we got to think about December wheat having a huge premium to July. I know the September contract on wheat itself, we get a close below 770. It's going to look kind of sloppy for the short term.
Soy complex, beans this week, a high of 14.18 and a quarter, a low at $13.77 and a quarter. Settlement price there at $13.87 and a quarter, down 27 and a quarter cents from last week. November beans at $13.81 and three quarters, down 15 and a quarter. Do you believe that beans can move lower?
I think beans can move lower. I think we're still worried about China's buys from here. South American crop was huge, and they're still buying there. And we might have had a few corn acres moved to beans due to lateness. I don't know if we have that much, but I think one thing we're missing is also is where we have planted. We're going to have missing acres due to the floods, a lot of places where they will not be able to get in and replant along the Mississippi and the Missouri. There will be acres that turn up zero and will be unharvested acres that we haven't taken care of yet in both beans and the corn.
South American soybean harvest was bigger than expected.
Big, and it's going to take us a while to work through that. I think it all probably relies on two things. One is when we start seeing the condition reports and see what kind of conditions we have on beans, and the other, of course, is whether we see China come back in and get aggressive on their purchasing, which I believe they will.
You know, the one thing I looked this last week, it's interesting, when you look at protein meal consumption, vegetable protein meal consumption, beans and other oil seeds, China actually on a per capita basis is now larger than Japan and homing in on South Korea. You know, I mean, you know, they're getting rather lofty at this point. And the point I'm going to make is I think we got to be prepared that their rate of growth in terms of imports of beans and products might start to slow a little bit at this particular juncture in time. It's hard to identify when. There is some anecdotal evidence over there. They are having some success slowing the economy down, though. So, you know, we might be overreaching a little bit on import expectations at this juncture.
Some of the rest of the numbers as they settled up in Chicago for the week. Live cattle futures at 102.72.5 are down $1.45. August feeder cattle at $123.60, down 62.5. And the lean hogs settled the June contract at $91.70 for 100 pounds, up $2.47.5 from the previous week. You can always hear our program if you'd like at willag.org. That's our website, willag.org. There you'll find Commodity Week and all the rest of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report. In just 2 minutes, we'll return and we'll talk with Jerry Golke.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The first full week of June was more like the middle of July across Illinois. High temperatures were well into the 90s this week, well above normal and approaching records in many locations. Average daily temperatures for the week ranged from 9 to 12 degrees above normal. Northern Illinois got a break from the heat on Thursday as the frontal boundaries sagged south of Interstate 80. Early afternoon temperatures Thursday in northern Illinois were in the 60s after being in the low to mid-90s on Wednesday. The cooler weather came with a price, however. Heavy thunderstorms trained across northern Illinois Wednesday night into Thursday morning, dropping several inches of rain from the Wisconsin line to south along Interstate 80. The heaviest amounts were measured in northern Kendall and northern Will counties, where a number of observers in the Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network reported more than 4 inches of rain, with one observer in Plainfield measuring 5 inches of rain. The front should move south into the Ohio Valley this weekend, and cooler, drier weather conditions will hold into early next week. However, the warm air will return northward beginning on Tuesday, and that will be accompanied by a chance for showers and thunderstorms. The rest of the week looks a little unsettled, with scattered showers and thunderstorms possible each day. Temperatures will be cooler to start, and then should be near normal the last half of the week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the June 10 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our guests in studio include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois. On the phone line today, Jerry Golke of the Golke Group. He's in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Jerry. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about the farms in North Dakota and what problems you have had and what your decisions have been about prevent plant if you've had to do that.
Well, I think the concentration of the bad areas is along the upper tier or the top tier of counties along the Canadian border. And I would say you could probably go 50 miles west of the Minnesota border and start there and go all the way to west through Minot, Williston in that area. And not a lot of corn in that northwest quadrant, but a lot of spring wheat, a lot of canola, and some soybeans. And they've got major problems. And I have, you know, future relatives that farm in that area. My daughter just landed in Bismarck about an hour ago and said the further north out of Bismarck she went, the worse it got. And she was there a couple weeks ago and said, you cannot believe how bad it is unless you see it yourself. So they're pretty much, I think, they planted longer than I suspected that they would, mainly because they didn't get very much done. And there are people there that have 5, 10, 15,000 acre farms that won't get half their crop planted. So I think we're looking at a bigger prevent planted number than last year, and I think we have to look at what the intentions were. We're about 2.1 million acres in North Dakota of corn versus 1.7 or 1.8 last year. So they intended, when the survey was taken in March, well, I intend to plant everything that I didn't plant last year. So I think we're going to be probably 300,000 acres less than last year, or about 600,000 or 700,000 acres less than they intended to plant.
Hey, Jerry, Bill Mayer, If you got a client that's got prevent plant on most of his acres or all of his acres, he's kind of taken out of the market as far as this rise in prices or what may come in rise in prices. What types of things do you see that he can do to maybe take advantage of the higher prices that may be coming in?
Well, other than speculating more than he probably did in farming in the first place, most of them that I talked to, their main goal was to get enough planted to meet their obligations of cash contracts they made, and then after that they weren't going to risk the dilution of the, if they got some acres in that look pretty good and then they come back later and get some that they're going to be 30 to 40 bushels an acre less, that dilutes their APH, and they weren't fond of that. And most of those in North Dakota that, remember 2009, and they like to watch football at Thanksgiving and not combine, and I think they learned a pretty good lesson back then that they stopped planting corn maybe a few days past when they could have legally stopped. In most places it was May 25th to June 5th, but I'm surprised at what price does to the incentive. It's a whole different deal than what it was in 2009, and suddenly even 100 bushel an acre on land that you might get 140 still looks pretty good at $7, especially when you consider the cost of land and the rent up there.
How about spring wheat? How many of those acres did not or will not be planted?
I think in the eastern half of the North Dakota, they planted it, but if there was one area that they shied away from, if there was dry acres to plant, they planted corn, and then after they got their corn base, they may have went over a little bit if they were lucky enough to plant, and then got and did not plant the spring wheat. So I suspect that if there's a surprise, it should be there in the spring wheat, and probably not a million acres less, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 700,000. I think in farmers around 500,000 acres less. But I think the situation in Europe and with Russia, unknown what they're going to do, probably overshadowed that. And they can get a crop of spring wheat by planting it up to the June 15th, but I think for the most part they quit. And most guys I talked to today said we're done. It's just an impossible task with more rain coming as well.
Jerry, this is Dale. To take another look at something a little bit different, how do you think the overall development of our economy, even the economies around the world, are going to impact this whole price structure and commodities?
Well, I heard you earlier, and I that's one thing I've been looking at. And, we hear all the talk about production side of this. And if you think about it, this has not been a demand-driven market per se. It all started a year ago with Russia and then Canada and then the United States. So we China has consumed more or wanted more, but this has been a supply problem. And I think the biggest thing that I look at is that what's sneaking up behind me that's going to catch me off guard, that's going to hurt my demand side of this. And I'm thinking that, we're a lot smarter as end users than what we were, and a lot of people were pretty confident that they had enough crop locked away in through June and maybe into July. And, you're not asking the end user to pay $8 a bushel for cash corn or $9 even on a $13 billion. You're asking them to pay it until he gets through that summer period of shortness, until he gets into a crop that's available. And my concern is that it's different looking ahead at a 7 in front of the number all the way out into next year through July. Versus last year at this time, looking at the potential of seeing $4 or $5 corn, then $5 or $6, and so I think that's going to change the attitude of end users looking down the barrel of $7 and saying, it could be worse if we get a problem in Brazil next spring or whatever, and then I think you start to curb demand. And I think the area that probably does it first will be exports. We could probably curb 200 or 300 million bushels out of exports.
Do you agree with the 100 million that came out of feed usage?
Yeah, I think with the you look at the hog markets going forward from, say, October on into next year, and it's everyone that we talk with said, yeah, things have changed. We made a lot of money last year, but going forward it's going to be pretty tough. And some people can work numbers out to say, I can still make $5 or $10 a head on hogs, and that's getting pretty nip and tuck. And I think anything further, the cash market is probably going to scare them a lot to come this summer, because that's going the other direction, you know.
And the other big sector, ethanol.
Yeah, interesting. Ethanol, a report came out that I get from Lynn Group here at the Board of Trade, and we had a big month last month in exports. And I think a lot of this usage and a lot of the production of ethanol was in advance of probably what's going to happen with the rivers and so forth. But we're doing well in ethanol yet, and I think all the numbers show that USDA is going to have a hard time bringing that number below $5 billion, and even next year could increase. So it's going to come on the backs of the end user and the exports. And just today, this afternoon, a poultry firm in Delaware, been in business for 70 years, filed bankruptcy, and blaming the high cost of corn because of the subsidized ethanol program. So we even have the end users now complaining, but they did not have a risk management program. They said their costs went up $10 million because of corn. So we're going to see more of that. And, of course, somebody took over, but I think there's the other thing that we haven't looked at, is that you're going to bring some of these guys out of the business if the prices are this high. And I looked at it in 2008, and I said, what can I do with $6 corn? We said we couldn't burn it, we couldn't export it, we couldn't feed it. And, of course, we had an economic problem then that I thought we had solved by now. And now you look at it, and then what can you do with $7 or $8 corn? And I think we destroyed demand to a point that we don't really want to go there.
Hey, Jerry, on the Missouri River, if you would, could you kind of address some of what Dale was talking about there earlier on the logistics, the transportation? Do you see that, you know, how's that going to affect the flow of grain and that type of thing?
Well, I think it affects it, you know, a lot, especially what we've seen recently in the price of meal. I think there's four plants that are going to have to shut down. Cargill is moving grain out of harm's way, and there's a lot of farmers that are in potentially flood potential areas that have grain and bins that have been now selling grain to the distribution points. And I think 200 or 300 trucks came in yesterday at a Cargill facility in Iowa, trying to get it out of their bins. So there's been a kind of a mini harvest in that area. But there's railroads. I know we have a client in North Dakota. It's an elevator. He can't ship west. Canadian railroads, the U.S. railroads are too soggy. And that begs a whole other question of not just grains, but logistics of everything. There's a lot of coal that comes out of the west that goes to the northeast. And when you think about the kind of forecasts that are coming out now about even a wetter June, similar to what we had in 1993, I've seen some popular weather forecasters coming out this afternoon that are looking at some things that says that we've got more problems ahead. You wonder how that logistics is going to affect things. And we're not done yet. We've got a whole summer of this left, I think. But it's going to be a problem in getting it where you want it. And probably that's why we've got bases so high. Some of that's going to have to go into transportation and so forth to get it there.
Jerry, thank you so much for taking the time with us
today.
Jerry Gulke is with the Gulke Group. He's in Chicago, Illinois. You can find him online at gulkegroup.com. Now for a final word from our panelist in studio, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
I feel the period here between now and the June 30th acreage report and, of course, the July 4th period there, I think is extremely important to your marketing plans, and you really need to have either on paper or in your head some idea how you're going to approach that if we see some kind of a run-up in prices here.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
Very nice prices to be either selling some cash or protecting to put a bottom under once you have it planted.
And Dale Durkles of Agrivisor.
Hey, all those corn demand people out there, take note. We have a June hog and pig report on the 24th. That may be a more important report than we think.
Again, our panelists in studio, thanks to them, Dale Durkles of Agrivisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champain, Illinois. That wraps up this June 10 edition of Commodity Week. If you'd like to hear it again, you can always do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. You have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Okay. That's all. I mean, you can hear.
That's all right. One ear works.
One ear works.
Thanks, Jerry.
Just so you put it on the right ear.
That's why I put it on the right.
You know, one of the things that think and see what you folks think about this. I was thinking about it that the stocks report that we get, you know, on June 30th is going to be as of June 1st. So the price activity between now and between June 1st and June 30th will have nothing to do with the stocks report, except that you can look back at it and say what kind of price we were looking at from March 1st to June 1st that may have influenced end users. And obviously it's going to be less than it is now unless the market goes down between now and then. So if we will show that we are curbing any kind of demand at all, and the government's warned us a couple times that you will curb demand, you're going to have to because we won't have enough, but at what price? You know, they raise their farm average price. But if we would come in here on June 30th and show that we actually were starting to curb demand in that March, April, and May time frame at prices 50 to 75 cents a bushel less in the futures, or say, or maybe even 75 cents in cash, that could end up being a very surprise to somebody out there that says, well, we don't need $7 corn. We were curbing demand at $6. And I don't know if that's going to come into being, but to me it looks like we've got a, someone mentioned earlier, we got a big risk in here, and I think we have a big risk of an up move or and a big up and a down move like we had in 1996. You know, we just exploded after that June 30th report.
No, I would agree with that. That's why I mentioned the June 24th hog and pig report, because
yeah,
we've had fall-winter hog futures just plummet since back in April themselves. I was figuring last week one day, December hogs, December corn, the hog-corn ratio was 9 to 1.
Right.
That's the kind of number you just don't ignore, don't forget about, because that's the kind of number that, you know, big feeders are sitting there going, I'm not having any fun doing this anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I think it's a good point. And that March 24th or June 24th report should give us a little heads up as to how we want to go into that report.
I would agree. It might tell us a little bit about what to think about that stocks report.
And on the other side of it, if you think about it, back in maybe 96, I recall, we didn't have near the ethanol plants but that we do now, but I remember some ethanol plants who had the wisdom to buy ahead, and when the price got high enough, they said, you know, I can make more money selling the corn than I can crushing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly you bring 150 million bushels back into the stream that you weren't going to use. I don't think that's a 300 million bushel swing, but it would not take much to solve the problem that we think perceive that we're going to have in August and September.
Yeah, Jerry, but there is a lot of those plants didn't stick around too long that did that back in 96,
right,
too.
Right, that's true.
Because they lost customers and lost
their
reliability.
You know, the one
right, and the gas industry is all about reliability. If you become an unreliable customer, you're done.
Right.
Well, the reason that, and Bill brought it up and you didn't specifically address it, you know, we've got a huge cluster of ethanol plants out on either side of the Missouri River. What kind of problem do we have getting ethanol away from those plants? Forget about the corn going in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it could be, there's a lot of things we don't know yet that's going to happen. And we've got some plants on the Iowa side of the problem. And, they're saying that what could happen if the water raises high enough, the water will come in around behind them and flood even more land, that Iowa has more susceptibility to good quality land being underwater than what even South Dakota or Nebraska has.
Yeah, it's back up on the tributaries.
Right. Yeah, I didn't realize how much water flowed out of that area up in there because, you know, the consensus is, and having grown up in that area, you could knock me over with a feather to say that we got too much water. We never had enough water, and in Montana, North Dakota, and you know, things have changed. So it has just been 3 years now, 3 years running, where it's been almost impossible to get the crop in on time.
Well, we have corn that's tied up because of the floods that can't get anywhere because, you know, can't go on the river, can't go rail. It's in the bins and it's surrounded by water?
It could be, but I know that a lot of people that are been warned about what's coming in the next week or so have been moving corn. Just the sight of 2 feet of water at the bottom of a grain bin doesn't excite you very much. So I think there's been a big move to move some of that out of there. We know firsthand guys doing that, and I'm sure that came to market. Unless they put it in storage, I don't know. But so there might have been even more of a suppressant on prices because of that grain movement out west than what otherwise would have been. But a lot of people are concerned. We've got some clients in south, in, you know, south of here, nobody talks really about Louisiana anymore and so forth, but there was a lot of land lost there, and we had a client at 10,000 acres, and he had 2,500 acres planted, and the rest, the levee broke, and they had farmers together that, that now are responsible for a levee that the Corps of Engineers abandoned and said, it's your problem now, and they were arguing over whether they should open it up and be proactive. But they wanted, they needed 100% protection, and they had some farmers in that little co-op that were concerned about that levee that hadn't bought crop insurance. So they were not going to let that thing flood. Well, it broke, and he called one day and said, you know, I'm looking down at the tops of my grain bins and the tops of my machine shed. He said, we've got 10 feet of water over the top of my corn and my rice and my cotton. And he said he doesn't know what kind of shape that land will be in next year, even to farm.
All right.
Thanks,
well,
Jerry.
Yep.
Gotta go.
Hey, guys, I recorded the end of this. Everybody okay with me just leaving it on the end of Commodity Week for the web?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Have a good weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Again.
Bye-bye.
Bye.